NPR's Deborah Amos has finished another month of reporting in Iraq. When she arrived, Iraq was formally an occupied country. While she was there, the United States handed limited sovereignty to an Iraqi government. We've been talking to our correspondents as they rotate out of Iraq. Last month, Eric Westervelt recalled the relief he felt as his plane left the Baghdad airspace. Deb Amos took a similar trip a few days ago, and she's in Amman, Jordan. And Deborah, I'd like to start by asking about that changeover in sovereignty that happened while you were in Iraq. What was the difference in the attitude of people you saw on the street before and after sovereignty?
You know, it was surprising to me that it did make a difference. Many of us had predicted that sovereignty wouldn't mean much to Iraqis, especially one that came in such a furtive, secretive way. It was 3 days early. But in small ways, you could see, both in our own staff at the NPR house in Baghdad, listening to talk radio, Iraqis were very, very excited about the possibility of sovereignty, limited though it is. And they were responding on the radio station. People said things like, please, terrorists, please, no car bombs today. Let us have today.
You know, a lot of people here ask, where do the NPR correspondents stay and how do they keep track of what's happening in the streets?
Well, we, unlike some reporters, do not stay in what's called the Green Zone, which is the heavily fortified place where most of the military and the American civilian side who are working on the reconstruction stay. We are in a house, and our security is essentially being below the radar, is what we always say. The good news about Iraq is that no one exactly looks like an Iraqi. In a multi-ethnic country, a mosaic like Iraq, there is no one type. So with a headscarf on and what's called hijab, which is a long, drapey black cloak, I look like every other woman in the country. And there's oftentimes that I will get to a security gate with a translator, and I'm called that lady from Najaf, which is a southern town, one of the shrine towns in Iraq. And I'm always happy when I hear that, the lady from Najaf, because I know that that in some ways makes me invisible. Now, Iraqis get killed quite frequently, so there's still random violence to worry about, but I don't stand out as a Westerner. And many women correspondents have that added protection. I often say that this is my flak jacket, this black headscarf that I wear.
I would think that as a woman that you are hearing things from women in Iraq that perhaps Iraqi women would be not so eager to say to men.
I do. I think that women have a notion about the possibility of democracy in Iraq in different ways than the men. What they say to you is, we can't have democracy in this country until the structure of the family changes, that every father is a dictator in his own home, that what he says is the law. And you can see, even now, that women feel that they are losing their positions in society. In many places, they are being forced out of the workplace. In many places, they are being forced to wear Islamically correct clothing. It's the kind of thing that they wouldn't have done 14 months ago. And they feel a bit unsettled about where their position in this society would be. I do spend a lot of time talking to women and women's groups who are trying to preserve the small amount of rights that they have. But their battle is going to be very, very difficult. Already, what you see is, you know, the U.S. spent a lot of money on women's groups and women's rights. It's a value that they wanted to transfer to the Iraqis. So men have figured out that one way that you can get grants is to start a women's group. So a lot of men are doing that. It's kind of become a joke among women who are working in this area that there's too many men now who want to start women's groups because of the grants.
Deb Ramis, you've been to Iraq now 4 times since the beginning of the U.S. invasion. How have things changed?
Well, every time I come there, it is a different country. I also was there in the 80s, and so I do know what it looked like under Saddam Hussein. Each time I come to Iraq, the security situation is worse than the time before. Each time you have to take more measures to worry about your own security, the security of the staff. The randomness of the car bombs were certainly unsettling. I think that is the thing I notice each time I go, that you would think that security would be getting better, that there would be some progress made.
Just the other day here in the United States, I was talking to a guy who has a relative who is serving in the U.S. military in Iraq, and he said, as some people here in the States say, Why isn't the media reporting all the good news out of Iraq, all the efforts to improve people's lives? Are you missing the good news?
I will say two things about that. I think that the Coalition Provisional Authorities media operation did them a huge disservice. These were mostly people from Washington who exported the press culture of Washington to Baghdad. They were not as active as they should have been in promoting what those successes were. In some cases, Steve, it was too dangerous to go see them. Unless the military came and got you and could ensure your safety, there was no way that you would get to see the storage project in the poorest neighborhood in Baghdad. It was simply too dangerous to be with them because they were targets themselves. Even in the month I was there, Emily Harris, my colleague, went out to see a garbage project, and, you know, there was a shot, and our driver had to hit the ground. So it is daunting to try to go see those kinds of projects. The problem is the Iraqis don't know about them either. There was a study that the 1st Cavalry Division did, who now are in charge of Baghdad, and they found out, much to their surprise, that the most shootings come from neighborhoods that have the least electricity, sewerage, and jobs. And so in the 4 months they've been there, they have been on a spending spree trying to fix those things. That correlation is so clear that that now has become policy for the military. Security and reconstruction are both parts of the same mission.
So you're staying in Amman, Jordan now, having left Baghdad. You going back?
I am. I hope to see if there is an election, to see how political parties develop, to see if there can be a political culture there. Once you begin reporting on this, you root for the Iraqis. It is now their country. They will have to do a great deal of the work. They say that they're ready to do it, and you just want to see if they can.
NPR's Deborah Amos is in Amman, Jordan, after finishing another month of reporting inside Iraq. Thanks very much.
Thank you.